Welcome to Winning Streaks. I'm your host, Tanvir Mustafa, and every week I get deep into the stories and strategies of experts, champions, business moguls, and industry leaders to find out how you can win the day and win at life. If you're committed to never settling for the status quo and consistently challenging yourself to new heights, then this is the show for you. In return, I commit to bringing you insightful, practical, and no BS conversations that will help you create your next big win.
My guest today has been the number one account executive internationally at MailChimp and is a gold member of the Untap Your Sales Potential coaching program. The transformation in her confidence is greater than almost any we've witnessed in the program. And today we're going to dive into exactly how she did that. Introducing Miriam John. Miriam, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tanvir. Thank you for having me. It's such a joy to be part of this today.
Well, I'm really happy to have you. And, you know, you've got a really joyous nature about you, which I love. But tell me how this all started. So you're at MailChimp now, but tell me a little bit about how you got started on your sales journey and where you were then at the beginning.
I think this is something that most people would say. Sales was not something I was after. It kind of found me. I think over the years, many people have told me I'm someone who's suitable for sales, but I've never actually given it a go. So I started out as a computer engineer, did a proper four-year coding degree, and then went on to do actually full-time coding. And then I went on to be a product evangelist because I had just got my master's in business. And then I moved to the UK. So all of this happened back in India, new country. And I think I was more into survival mode because I wanted to take a job immediately. Didn't want to stay at home and kind of waste my skills. Mm-hmm. I put it like that. But anyway, so I took up the first job that came up my way, which was quite close to what I was doing back in India. And that's how I landed in sales. So knowing nothing about sales or never being trained in sales or didn't even know how to pick up the phone and call someone because I was brought into the role because I was technically good. I knew the product very well. I'd worked in that product already for 3 years, knew the ecosystem quite well. But as someone who's never done sales, it was quite a challenge. But I would say it was a fun challenge because I don't remember being scared about it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. it was only after, like, I think, of 2 years, and I was doing quite well initially, that I started to struggle, which happened mm-hmm. in the new role. So all of this with EN started when I was in the deepest valley of despair, when everything was going wrong and I didn't have anyone to turn to. And then I believe it's history. How far do you want me to go into the story?
Yeah. You mentioned the valley of despair, right? It's a point in everyone's, you know, I think in lots of salespeople's careers where they reach and they just kind of feel like, do I really want to be doing this? You know, and there's a lot of stress, anxiety, you know, lack of confidence, lots of pressure, all of that. And that's when you found us. But talk to me about what that valley of despair looked like for you and how it came about.
Okay. So even hearing you say valley of despair, me saying that gives me this weird tinge in the bottom of my stomach because it brings back all the emotions for me. So I think the base thing that all started with is the ecosystem. You could be the most amazing salesperson, or you could be the most amazing person out there, have the best skills. But if you're not in the right ecosystem that supports you, everything could very easily go wrong very quickly. So I think that was the first thing that was lacking where I was. And then I did not have the competence. And I say this with a lot of humility today, probably would have been too proud to agree with that a year ago. Mm-hmm. That was actually needed for enterprise sales. So going into it new without a mentor and without the right ecosystem, I was trying to reinvent the wheel. That's exactly how I'd put it, because I knew that there were people who knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. People were doing really well, but then I was trying to literally start from zero, mm-hmm. Reinvent things. And then I would try so many things every single day, 16-hour days. I wouldn't sleep. I would be quite sleep deprived. And I was I was doing so much, but I was doing nothing as well at the same time, if that makes sense in any single way.
Can you describe that? Because I think this is a common challenge that a lot of salespeople run into, where it's like they feel busy all the time, but nothing's really getting done, or not much is really getting done. So can you describe in detail what that might have looked like for you?
So basically, I lacked priorities. I didn't know what was a revenue generating activity, which is one of my most favorite phrases these days. But I didn't know what are these. And I would just go into work and then have my list of accounts, mm-hmm. and then keep staring at them. I would keep doing research about them. I would look at the stakeholders, and I would try to do so many things at the same time without focus and without prioritizing, which meant that I was actually trying to do a lot of things, but with no proper structure. Mm-hmm. And I did not know how to structure this as well. So which meant I was constantly busy. Also, I was so tired that I was overworked, that whatever I was doing was not so productive enough. So again, going back to Ian's Pareto rule, that work fills the time, no matter how much time, work will make sure to fill that time. So I was just constantly being overworked and not my most efficient self, mm-hmm. Which meant that even though I was constantly busy, I wasn't accomplishing anything at the end of it. Also, because I'm not accomplishing anything, I get anxious again, and then the wheel just continues and continues, and then you get to a point where, like, maybe I'm not right for this. I'm trying so hard. Mm. You don't think I'm not being smart. You think I'm trying so hard, but nothing seems to be working for me. So I'm not the right fit for this. That's where I was, which was the deepest point.
Mm-hmm. You thought that.
Hopefully the lowest point for a while.
Yeah. You thought that you weren't, or it wasn't for you anymore. And as you mentioned, the lowest point, what did you take away from that experience, and how did you change after that? Or how did you decide that something needed to change?
So obviously I realized that I'm trying to do a lot, but nothing's going my way. But also, as someone who hasn't failed as many times as normal people should have in their life, it was a humbling experience, because then it made me think, what could I do differently? I think I mentioned this in our previous call. I think I was watching something on Netflix, and then I realized everyone's got a coach and I don't have one. And I think this is, I can't remember the name of the program. I think this is about tennis.
Okay.
This is quite famous on Netflix. Breaking Point, I guess.
Oh.
So everyone's got a coach, and I realized that at different levels, people had different coaches. Like, you don't stay with the same coach that you started with at your kindergarten level. You don't do that with the district level. You don't do that at county level. You keep changing, right? You're great. So whoever has taught me so far hasn't been playing or hasn't played in the past in the enterprise space. Mm. So I started looking out for people who had done that in the past, and I wanted to try and replicate what they had done, which is when I came across Ian. So someone who'd actually done enterprise sales, or someone who'd actually cracked the enterprise sales space, but also someone who took the same journey as me, because Ian quite often talks about this, where he says he also had these three successive years of failure. And then it took one single day where he realized, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. Yeah. So I think it's for me, it's not a single moment, but I think I went through a lot of thinking and observing things, and then understanding what I could do differently. And I went from there.
Yeah, it all starts with a choice, right? Change doesn't happen overnight, but change starts with a choice to decide that you want to change and decide that things need to be different. So you made the decision, you made the choice to change. What happened after that? What tweaks did you start making to your process or the way that you operated to go from, you know, feeling at your lowest point to now being, you know, the number one rep internationally at MailChimp? How did you go about doing that?
So the very first thing I did was prioritization, and priorities were not just about work. Priorities was about my personal space, my personal boundaries, how I perceived my value of my family, how much time I wanted to spend with them. So once I got those priorities right, it was quite easy to work backwards and then say the time that I'm spending at work, how do I want to make it more efficient? The other thing that Ian talks about again a lot is, what is my hourly rate?
Yeah.
How much money do I want to make versus how much am I making right now? Mm-hmm. Or whatever work I'm doing per hour, is it going to translate into that money? Okay. So whatever is that money? So working, bringing all of those thought perspectives into how I prioritize my work was the most essential thing. So again, going back to RGA, revenue generating activities. So every morning starting with progressing deals and every afternoon working on prioritizing, bringing in new leads. So I think that's how I started. The most important thing I think I worked with Ian on was making sure I was cutting myself some slack, being kind to myself. I was so hard on myself, and I talk about this quite often because of who I am, where I come from, being an immigrant. I don't take failure easily, and it's not acceptable to fail. My parents didn't bring me up to fail. And as a society, it's so hard to be a failure because even though no one's actually looking at, down on me right now, or no one's actually helping me through the tough times, the perception that everyone's constantly judging me always gets to me. So that's a bit hard to talk about. So the perception, so it was so hard to think about all of that for me. I'm going to leave it at that.
Let's talk about it. I think it's important because a lot of us wrestle and grapple with feelings of failure, right? It's, I think there's a lot of things that salespeople keep to themselves and they can't necessarily talk to other people about, they can't really share about, but that's part of the reason people get coaches, is that so they have somebody to talk about those things with and really be able to get an outside perspective and third party perspective on what is it that we're not thinking about or how could we be thinking differently. So what has been your relationship with failure and what's your relationship with it now? How do you see it differently, if at all?
So my first interaction with failure, it was more about the fear of failure than actually failing, because once I failed, I didn't think about me failing. I actually started being more happy, truthfully. I started taking much more longer walks. I enjoyed the wind more. I loved the sun more. It's so cliched or quite cinematic the way I'm explaining it, but that's exactly what I did. I did have the initial dread for 2 weeks where Ian said, Miriam, stop doing this. You've got to get up and go do different things with life. He did say that to me. I did have this first 2 weeks where I was like, no, this is not happening to me, where I was in a denial phase.
Yeah.
But then from there, I picked it up and then I then became my own person. So I was more confident, basically. So I was like, what am I going to do next? How can I do it better? Where can I go from here? How do I use all of the skills that I've now gathered by failing or during the process of failing and use that to be more successful in life? Because looking back, the perspective just changed. I wasn't actually a failure, or I probably had failed, but I wasn't a failure. I looked back and saw all the things that I had done, crossing oceans, coming here, starting a new life, finding a new job, getting my sponsorship for a visa. There were so many things that I had done that I was so proud of that I didn't want to let that failure define me. But how it has changed my perspective of failure is, I think I saw someone say this day before yesterday on LinkedIn. If I'm succeeding 100% of the time, I'm not stretching myself hard enough.
Right.
And then if I'm succeeding 90% of the time and failing 10%, it means I'm having a wildly successful year because I'm also experimenting on new things that I can potentially fail in, allowing myself to fail. Just going back to the point where Ian tells me to treat myself with grace and kindness, I think that's the most important learning, to be kind to myself.
I like that a lot. I think it's something that we're not doing enough. You know, I talk to a lot of salespeople and I consistently find myself in calls having to say, hey, just give yourself some more grace. Not enough salespeople are doing that because the pressure is so high, right? It's so much and there's a lot to deal with. But I know that for a time you were in a rut, right? You felt like this isn't going to get any better after, I guess, some of that initial failure. How did you get out of that rut?
I think talking to people helped the most. So yes, Ian was one of those people because Ian was like, he talks about how much he fails, that it makes you feel that you're not the only one who's failing. And then I looked around me, and this was the time when there were massive numbers of tech layoffs happening. And then I was part of the UK pod as well. And then I had another member of the pod who was the highest achieving member in Salesforce who got let go as well. And then being part of that pod, a local pod where we all meet on a bi-weekly basis and talk about how everyone's failing in their own way. I mean, it sounds a little bit bad to say this, but it makes you feel better that you're not the only one who's failing on a day-to-day basis. So it sounds a little bit bad for me to almost feel like I'm happy about other people failing, but that's not exactly what I'm saying. It's exactly the opposite. But I'm thinking about, I'm not the only one who's failing. Everyone has their own challenges. Everyone has their ups and downs, especially a sales career. When you have those infinite looking numbers in an inachievable region, when people expect the impossible from you, and sometimes these numbers are realistic. And we have to agree that even if being number one, if you've done that in the past, it can be impossible when you're presented with these new challenges. So being kind to yourself is so much important, and then realize that these are the actual things. This is what I've been presented with, and this is how I'm going to approach this. And I think this is again from Ian, where he says, do not focus on the outcomes. You focus on the process, what you do day in and day out, your consistent input into the process. Mm-hmm. And you're not thinking about what I'm going to get out of it. Is this going to be a success or a failure? So focusing on what I can do and not focusing on what's going to be the outcome was, again, the biggest mind shift that I took.
This episode of Winning Streaks is brought to you by Untap Your Sales Potential. 2 years ago, I was blindly navigating my role as an account executive at Salesforce. I didn't have any structure or any organization to my approach. And if you would have asked me what my strategy was, I would have told you that I was just throwing as much at the wall as possible and seeing what sticks. This led me to extreme burnout, high levels of anxiety, and frankly, a complete lack of fulfillment from my role as a sales professional. It honestly made me even wonder if I was even cut out to be in sales. That's when I found the Untap Your Sales Potential coaching program. Founded by Ian Koniak, Untap Your Sales Potential is a sales coaching program that teaches the exact frameworks, processes, and strategies that have helped Ian close over $100 million in sales across industry giants such as Ricoh and Salesforce. With multiple number one finishes and seven-figure years, Ian's expertise is unparalleled. This program will help you access the mindset, habits, and selling skills of the top 1% of tech sales professionals. After I started working with Ian, I ended up finishing number one on my team 2 years in a row, closed over $3.6 million in sales, and earned my spot at President's Club. Most importantly, it helped me rediscover my purpose and experience true fulfillment. But don't just take my word for it. We've had over 150 students go through this coaching program, with many of them shattering income records, exceeding their quotas, and achieving levels of success they never thought possible. So if you're ready to level up and untap your sales potential, visit untapyoursalespotential.com and book a free strategy call with me, where we'll talk through where you're struggling, where you'd like to improve, and how we can help. Again, that's untapyoursalespotential.com to book your free strategy call today. Now let's get back to the show.
To the point that you said earlier, you know, it's not necessarily about the fact that you're making fun of other people struggling. It's that sometimes when you're struggling together, the struggle is easier, right? For everybody involved. Because you know, like you said, you're not alone, right? You're not the only one. And it's another way that you can be kind to yourself is by surrounding yourself with a community of other people who get you and get what you're going through. Now, I think there's still a big discrepancy with what you were doing before and what you're doing now, right? Because before you were saying you're working 16 hours, sometimes 18 hour days, to now being worked a full productive workday, but then being able to go home and sort of have a strong work-life balance. So tactically speaking, and from an execution standpoint, what are you doing differently to make the most of an 8 hour day that you weren't able to previously do with a 16 hour day? You know, what's different about the way that you sell and your actual selling process?
I think the first thing is going to be the long-term vision, knowing that I cannot achieve everything on a single day or a single week or a single month. And then breaking that down to say, this is what I'm going to do this month, this week, and this day, and then going from there. And also, when I understand what I'm going to do, I'm able to translate this to whoever is my manager or my leader and say, I think we need to have realistic standards. This is how my current day looks. This is what I'm allocating towards our long-term efforts. And this is what I'm allocating to today's efforts. Because with sales, you have to make sure that you're bringing in the numbers today. And you also have to make sure you can replicate this and bring it in long-term as well. So you need to do your short-term things and your long-term things. If you don't do your short-term things, you can't keep your job. And again, if you don't do your long-term things, 6 months from now, you can't keep your job. Right. So either way, there's, you almost feel like there's no success here. There's no winning here. Yeah. But then the only way to do that is looking at the bigger picture and then translating into much more smaller chunks, but then planning, planning ahead and saying, this is what I'm going to do. And time blocking, I'm this current favorite of time blocking, making sure it's on my calendar. If it's on my calendar, it gets done or it gets moved because of a specific reason. But then if it gets moved, I try to my best to get it done the second time. So I don't push it to the third time. So you can move it once, but you can't move it again. I mean, you can skip once, you can't skip the second time. I say this, it's very hard to do, especially on these very busy days when you have had like 8 customer calls and you're kind of driven down and you don't have the focus or the energy to do this. But if it's on your calendar, you have to get it done. So I think consistency, showing up every day for myself, is the most important thing that I'm doing differently right now.
Mm-hmm. I love your energy, Miriam. You're just got so much joy and happiness in your voice and the way you, you know, approach conversations. I think it's like 8 o'clock there right now or something, you know, it's in the evening for you right now. So like, what are you doing? Is this just who you are, or have you been doing something to keep your energy high throughout the day and keep your attitude optimistic and, you know, generally just keep a joyous attitude about yourself? Like, is there some way that you work on that on a regular basis, or is it just natural?
Truthfully, it's natural. I don't want to take credit for something that's been gifted to me. But then I think over the years, I've also made a conscious choice to be kind to others, because that's something I didn't do as a teenager. I'm quite regretful of that, because it's very hard to see from the other person's perspective, to see what they're going through in their day, and be kind towards that. So as I work towards being kind to myself, I also try and put myself in other people's shoes, to make sure I'm giving that joy to other people. It's a very, very hard thing to do. I fail constantly, but I try every day.
And that's all that matters, right? Trying is the first and most important step. And then everything else sort of will fall. All the chips will fall where they may. The other transformation that I've seen you make, which has been the craziest one, is just your confidence, right? It's gone through the roof. But I understand that at the beginning of this journey, your confidence was shot. Basically, it was gone, partially due to the fact of, like you said, the environment that you're in. So talk to me a little bit about that. Why your confidence was the way it was, and yeah, we'll go from there.
So I'm typically a confident person. Most people who have met me in my life would say I'm a confident person, but I don't think anyone actually met the real me in that 1 year where I was going through that valley of despair. Yeah, as I said. But the most important things that contributed was when I walked into an office, no one ever came and asked me, what can I do to help you? Or how can we all help to make things better? It was more of always a blame game where people were like, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. But no one would ever say how you could actually do that. And then every single day I would feel like I've been beaten down, literally. Like, I mean, this was mentally, but then I would come back home with that physical feeling of someone had literally beaten me down. Mm-hmm. And then I had to pick myself, put myself back together, and then show up with the same face to the same office every single day. It was one of the really hardest things that I did in my life. And I probably wouldn't wish that to anyone else, but I know for a fact this is something that happens quite widespread in our industry. The other thing is, I would walk into this office and it would, I mean, I will go ahead and say it. it used to be all men, typically white, most of them middle-aged or older. And there was no one I could actually identify myself with or anyone I could bank upon. So when I say the ecosystem or the environment, it's so easy to think of certain things and forget so many things. Mm-hmm. However, me as a person walking to this office, I mean, I'm saying the office, I worked offline. I worked in the office only two times a week. I was remote most of the time. But then when I think about the office, these are all the elements that stand in front of my face, in my head. I'm thinking about all of these elements. And this is often taken for granted or often not seen with a closer eye, I would say. I mean, we all know in sales, there are not enough women out there, not enough women who are in the later stages still doing sales or being sales heads out there. So working in that ecosystem was the hardest thing that I had to do, which eventually kind of burned me out, not just because of the work I was doing, but also of the environment that I constantly went in and came out of. So my husband had literally put me back together, the pieces back together every night so that I could show up to the office next morning. So the work was not the difficult part, because looking back, I learned so much by doing so many things by myself. I figured out so many things by myself. Now I know who to go to if I need something. So I know Ian exists now. I know there are so many other coaches out there. I know if I need a problem, if I have a problem, who to go to and how to approach that problem, which is one of the biggest learnings I came with. So I don't regret the process I went through, but the environment in which I had to go through that process. Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to somebody who might be feeling the same things? Like you said, it's a pretty widespread occurrence. I know there was a time in my sales career where I felt like I was ending every day feeling like I just ran a marathon, you know? What advice would you give to that sales rep who's feeling similar feelings?
I would say don't be afraid to quit and find a new place or a new environment to do this back again, because oftentimes it's not you. And most people who are in sales can be trained to much better. You just need the right coach and the right training and the right environment. And I'm sure most salespeople would be like the best out there. So all of us are in sales because we know we are capable of doing this. And I think 99% of salespeople out there are capable of doing that. We just need to trust ourselves and trust our instincts. And sometimes we just let things run for too long, like I did, and then say, no, I'm going to do this for one more day, one more week, one more month. And then when you look back, it's just 9 months already. And then you're like, that's a very difficult 9 months that I had to put with. It probably cut out 3 years of my life, gave me a lot of black eyelines, gave me a few wrinkles and white hair. So it typically took 3 years out of my life. I can say for sure that 1 year. So don't do that to yourself. Don't do that. We can all find better jobs out there. We all have great opportunities. And I think the tech space goes through its own highs and lows. Yeah. I mean, just 1 year ago, there were like massive layoffs. Now everyone's talking about rapid expansion. There are still businesses doing layoffs. So there are always businesses out there that are hiring in tech.
Yeah. And there will always be a place for you to find a home. I mean, or find a company to work with, at least. I mean, I've seen so many people stay in jobs way longer than they needed to. And like you said, it takes a toll. Like, you can add miles to your body, your mind, your spirit, you know, your confidence and all those things. But thankfully, you know, you made the right choice for yourself and ended up going somewhere that, you know, where now you're obviously really able to succeed. But also what you've done is, again, what I would consider a complete 180 from a confidence standpoint. So talk to us a little bit about how did you go about building back up your confidence after, you know, feeling like you were at the bottom? What did you do to bring that back?
I think ChatGPT helped a lot.
Nice.
You probably didn't expect me to go there. But anyway, so I wasn't asking ChatGPT questions of how to make life better, but instead, obviously, I was looking for a lot of jobs. I think I applied for hundreds of jobs. Mm-hmm. And I was not going to like, I didn't want to like spend hours and hours researching about these businesses. So the easiest thing I could do is that before an interview, I would go and ask ChatGPT to tell me in 5 short words or whatever to describe to me about the business. And then I would ask it like a range of questions. So it made my life so much easier, and AI makes our life so much easier. Now, turning up to an interview and being the most intelligent person that these people have interviewed so far gives you a boost of confidence. Let me tell you, because people are so amazed that you took the time to research about their business. They're so impressed with you that they will outright to your face tell you how glad they are to be interviewing you, because they have gone through a list of candidates who didn't bother enough to even look up their name. And then it's just those very tiny, simple things that you build up along the way. So you turn up for one interview, you're prepared, someone gives you a boost of confidence, you take that confidence onto your next prep, next round, and then you just build it from there. So again, confidence is not like a single thing that is a massive ball that came together. It's just very tiny, tiny drops of ocean that built an ocean for me. So apart from that, I used to go to the local library. They ran those book clubs that I used to sit in. All of them were typically old. Everyone was about 70 years old. I didn't even fit in, but then sitting there listening to their stories about their own struggles and how they have come through in life. So doing a lot of random things kind of brought me back together.
Okay, so trying to, I mean, that's a lot that you did, and I know it's unique to you, but again, for somebody who's not feeling confident, like let's say they've had months of poor performance in their role, you know, they're struggling and they're not sure how to get out, but and they have a complete lack of confidence in themselves. What would you recommend? Because again, you did it.
So I think the first thing is finding a coach, which is the most important thing that I did, because this person is going to be someone who's not involved in your work day to day, but also someone who has probably gone through a very similar experience and cracked it. So they could probably first be a listening ear so they can sympathize with you, empathize with you, but also give you coping mechanisms. While with E and I learned like a ton of coping mechanisms, like stoicism, like anything could happen to you, but how would you react to this? That's probably one of the coping mechanisms. And before this, we started this podcast, I was doing my box breathing. I hope I'm saying the name right.
It's about you are.
Four seconds of breathing in, 4 seconds of holding, 4 seconds of breathing out, and again, 4 seconds of holding. So many coping mechanisms. So people who have done it in the past have already figured it out. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. So that's the first thing I would do. Find a coach in your industry, or someone you can trust. And talk to. The second thing is going back to your family or friends, whomever you trust, your personal circle that have been with you over the past. Sometimes we're so caught up with work, we forget that we do have the support system that we all grew up with as friends, families. You would have at least a few people that you can go back and talk to. So don't be ashamed. Go back to them and open up and tell them what you're going through, because we let shame stop us so much of the time that we are rather happy to be in agony alone rather than share it with someone and then reduce the pain. Because once you start sharing, people also say that they're going through something. Might not be the same thing in sales, might be something in their life. So you actually end up helping a friend while the friend also ends up helping you. So go back and tap into that support system that you have. And the third thing is probably doing random things. So things that you've been on your list for a very long time that you haven't given yourself the chance to do that. I mean, I play with Play-Doh. I bought a bunch of Play-Doh for me to make miniature stuff. Go and do things with your hands. I wrote a list of things I'm grateful for. So I think one of those days when I was so sad, I think I practically stopped sleeping for a while. I ended up writing a list of things I'm grateful for in my life. And then I think I was doing this mental list because I was trying to fall asleep. I was not writing it. And then as I was making this list, I actually fell asleep because there were so many things I was grateful for in life that it was impossible for me to finish it. But my mind actually let me go to sleep because it was starting to make me think I'm thankful for all that I have rather than feeling bad for the things that I don't have. So I think all of those are things people could typically tap into.
Amazing tools and mechanisms, and everything that you mentioned is on point. I mean, when you talk about doing random things, I think it's like not necessarily totally random. Do random things that fill your cup, right? That energize you, that you enjoy. I know for me, like sometimes I just need to go for a walk, you know, I just need to go for a nice walk outside, get the breeze on my face, and I feel better like almost instantly. So very good tips, advice, and really enjoyed doing this episode with you, Miriam. Where can people find you and learn more about you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm Miriam John, and my DMs are open. They're not locked. You don't need InMail. Because most people do say this, and then when you try and access them, it's on InMail. I'm like, damn, you shouldn't have said that. So I do have my DMs open, and I'm more than happy to help people in any way I can.
Amazing. Well, I appreciate that. Before we go, what's one last piece of advice you would give to my listeners to help them achieve their next big win?
I think working with your leaders and opening their perspective up is the most important thing, because managers sometimes forget that sales is a performance sport. People need to be constantly trained, upskilled, keep in touch with those training skills that will help them perform much better. And then opening your managers up to that thought perspective, how they themselves could train and understand how they could help their sales team, is a very important thing. I think we're not doing enough of that, and I would like for everyone to take that away.
Amazing. Thanks so much for coming out of the show, Miriam.
It was a joy. Thank you so much, Tanvir. Lovely meeting you again.
You too.